Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan. That's author, farmer, and president of Watershed Media, Dan Imhoff. He explains why any American who likes to eat should be invested in what the next farm bill looks like. Harvest Public Media looks at the increasing popularity of the gluten-free diet. Is it a legitimate path to healthy living or just another fad diet? Chef Matthew Locricchio talks about his new cookbook aimed at introducing teenagers to vegetarian eating. And in the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr wraps up some dolma stuffed with oyster mushrooms. But first, he has to forage for the grape leaves. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to Luann Johnson. She has our weekly food news.
Good news starts off our headlines. On April 30th, USDA Undersecretary Kevin Concannon announced expanded grant eligibility for farmers markets and direct marketing farmers looking to begin use of wireless point-of-sale equipment. This equipment makes it possible for consumers receiving SNAP benefits to use those benefits to purchase fresh produce from their local market. The USDA estimates that in 2012, 3,200 farmers markets and direct marketing farmers were set up to accept SNAP benefits, up from 750 in 2008. In a test of ground turkey from markets nationwide, Consumer Reports found that 90% of samples contained strains of harmful bacteria like E. coli and Salmonella, most of which were found to be resistant to one or more commonly used antibiotics. Even organic and antibiotic-free labeled turkeys were found with the bacteria. Under current guidelines, up to half of samples tested can contain Salmonella. The Consumer Union wants that number reduced to 12%. Last year, Cargill Value Added Meats voluntarily issued two of the largest recalls of ground turkey ever after Salmonella Heidelberg was found in the meat. 136 people were sickened in the outbreak and one died. Wrigley's announced it will release a caffeinated chewing gum called Alert Energy. This has caught the attention of the FDA, which has said it would investigate the potential health effects of added caffeine in foods, particularly its effect on children. Wrigley has said their gum is only intended for and marketed to adults. Energy drinks like Monster and 5-Hour Energy have been investigated in the past because of hospitalizations and deaths linked to the consumption of the product. The European Union has voted to ban pesticides that may be contributing to the decline of global bee populations. The compounds in question, neonicotinoids, have been found in pollen and nectar, and also have been linked to bee deaths in some studies. In addition, non-fatal doses have been associated with a range of adverse health effects, including reduced navigational ability. Environmentalists praise the 2-year ban, saying the ban gives bees the opportunity to rebound. The world's first continent-wide ban has its detractors, however. European pesticide giants Bayer Crop Science and Syngenta both oppose the measure, saying there isn't enough research to support the prohibition. Neonicotinoids are some of the most widely used pesticides worldwide. Read more about these news stories on our website, eartheats.org, and find out about food news throughout the day by following us on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, and find us by searching for Earth Eats. Luann Johnson, thanks for the news. Gluten-free diets, which bar food containing wheat, rye, and barley, are wildly popular today, which is surprising given that experts estimate only about 1% of the U.S. population suffers from celiac disease, the disorder that causes their immune systems to reject the pesky gluten. But as Harvest Public Media's Abby Fentress-Swanson reports, this diet fad and others are largely driven by Americans' growing appetite for food solutions to their health woes. And in today's social media world, those ideas move along like hot potatoes.
I sure do love sesame oil. I know it's kind of an indulgence at the grocery store, but it sure is flavorful.
In a tiny kitchen in the corner of a small fitness studio in Liberty, Missouri, Jonna Perry is cooking up a gluten-free masterpiece: chicken fried rice with kale and sugar snap peas. She is surrounded by a half dozen people eager to learn how to make dishes without wheat, rye, or barley. Perry, who has celiac disease herself, has been presenting these cooking classes for 2 years. The thing is, tonight, as is often the case, not one of her students has celiac disease.
So many people have gone through doctor after doctor after doctor looking for a way to feel better and not finding that doctor who's the puzzle solver for them just yet. And so they're kind of left putting this in their own hands.
And that's the deal for marketing consultant Cara Welter, who came to tonight's class to get some new recipes.
I don't eat gluten. I haven't eaten gluten for 6 months. I happened to just try it because I was having stomach issues for years, and turns out within 3 days I stopped having stomach issues.
Welter's decision was based on information she found online. Then she had her doctor run tests to see if she had a gluten sensitivity.
And it didn't even show a gluten intolerance, but, you know, I don't care if it's a placebo effect. It's completely changed my life.
Welter is among the 1.6 million Americans on gluten-free diets, even though they haven't been medically diagnosed with celiac disease. But it's not just gluten-free foods consumers are hoping will fix their health issues. People are eating according to their blood type, following low-carb diets, and eating like cavemen on the Paleolithic or paleo diet. And they're doing so with the help of online recipes and videos featuring celebrities extolling a diet's benefits. Take this clip of 60 Minutes correspondent Bob Simon interviewing Serbian tennis superstar Novak Djokovic, who swears by a gluten-free diet.
And what about this gluten-free diet?
It's great. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Yes, you lose weight and you feel
Sounds
better.
Sounds like you've become a bit of a campaigner.
Yeah.
Internet. Research.
At her office at the University of Missouri, registered dietitian Ellen Schuster is looking up a recent Pew Research Center report that found more and more people are making their health decisions by surfing the net.
So I do think people are relying on the internet, they're relying on, you know, mobile apps, they're relying on social media, and I do think that there is, for some people, not everyone, there may be distrust of the healthcare system, and people look to friends and other sources of information, family, for health conditions.
She says consumers are looking for that magic bullet.
What is the one thing that I can do? If I can remove gluten from the diet, everything will be fine. I'll feel better. And of course, you know, we know that's not true.
What's more, eliminating certain foods from a diet can be risky, says Paula Vandelik, a nutritionist at a Hy-Vee grocery store in Columbia, Missouri. She advises customers about the shortcomings of a gluten-free diet.
Unfortunately, if you take out the wheat component of food, that encompasses some of the fiber in your everyday diet. So unless you're getting large numbers of fruits, vegetables, other whole grains such as chia seed or flaxseed, you're missing that big fiber component.
And many gluten-free products for sale here are highly processed and full of added fat and calories. Vandelik picks up a box of gluten-free Betty Crocker brownie mix and reads the ingredients.
There's sugar, semi-sweet chocolate chips, cocoa pressed with alkali, rice flour, potato starch, cornstarch, xanthan gum, and salt.
Since so many of her clients are sold on certain diets, though, Vandelik simply tries to make sure they're fully informed.
I can't really argue with them if they're saying it makes them feel better, other than to show them ways to make sure that they're getting all of the nutrients that they need by following that certain diet.
And with new diet-specific Facebook groups and Pinterest pages popping up every day, American consumers may soon be moving on to the next big food trend anyway. Abby Fentress-Swanson, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Dan Imhoff is the author of several books, including Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to the Next Food and Farm Bill, and CAFO, The Tragedy of Industrial Animal Factories. He's also a small-scale farmer growing everything from olives to apples in Healdsburg, California. In the rest of his free time, he's also a musician, having spent some time at the Berklee College of Music. With all this on his plate, we were thrilled to chat with him when he visited Bloomington, Indiana recently to talk about why the farm bill matters.
We didn't get a new farm bill, and it's sort of, at least as far as I can tell, sort of fallen off the radar. We're focusing on other things right now. Can you give us an update on what's happening?
I think, actually, that the wheels are in motion for the House and Senate Ag Committees to start the process again this year. You know, the reason that we didn't get a farm bill last year really was the House refused to vote on the proposal that, you know, that their House Agricultural Committee put forth. And they just didn't want to get into this argument over how much we should cut food stamps, really, it came down to. Because if you don't know it, you know, the Farm Bill, it's kind of euphemistically called the Farm Bill because it's really about nutrition and agriculture and taking care of the land. But, you know, since the Great Recession of 2007, really the food stamp enrollment has just skyrocketed up to almost 50 million people. And that means that 80 cents out of every dollar of Farm Bill money spent, it goes to the food stamp program called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The real tragedy is that it's those small programs that really have big benefits to people on the land and really are trying to create this dual food system, a sustainable local regional food system, you know, that concurrent with the industrial ag system that dominates our agriculture. Those things really get cut when we don't have a new farm bill.
I'm surprised that personally I haven't noticed that we haven't had a new farm bill. Can you tell me why I haven't noticed, or maybe I'm just not paying attention in the right places?
To me, the Farm Bill is one of the most important legislations that people don't know anything about. You know, I mean, it has such a wide-ranging effect. This $100 billion goes out, helps to take care of people who really need food. It definitely makes the rules of our farming system, of who grows what and who gets paid for it and under what conditions. But it also is there to act as kind of a forward-thinking safety net, research engine, even trade ambassador. So it has all these many, many multiple functions in the economy. But what you find is that our rural areas are really shrinking in population, and because of that, they have less and less representation in the government, and there's a lot less willingness for the government to pick up these issues that, you know, are seemingly dropping off the radar, but they're as vital as the food on your table and the clean water in your tap.
I watched your TEDx talk, which was fabulous. One of the first things you say is, when I think of a sense of place, I think of food.
I've been fascinated by gardening and food since I was a kid. And food was really important in my family. My dad was a cook. He was a really seriously good cook. I kind of took food the other way as a producer, as a grower. So, you know, for me, it's not the farm bill that gets me up in the morning and get out of bed. It's taking care of the plants and animals first.
Well, you don't sell, but I'm wondering if you can respond to a producer's concern, someone who does sell. I spoke with the people at Eden Farms. They grow hydroponically, and they wanted to get their product into the local supermarket chain. And they just found such resistance. So, you know, small cooperative grocery stores, farmers markets, they're all fine and good. How do local farmers and local food in general, how do we expand that if we can't get into big grocery stores?
I think it's really on a catch-can basis, because I certainly see lots of grocery stores as I travel around the country, and they seem to be increasing their intake of local and regional produce when they can. You know, what I would say is you might try to wage a campaign of customers writing to that grocery store saying, hey, why don't you get local instead of Hawaiian grown this or that. I mean, sometimes it's the consumers with the power, and, you know, if you can't get them one way, then I think you have to try to get them another way. I think that scale is the thing that we're constantly bumping up against as we're trying to make a truly healthy food system. On the one hand, you might celebrate that Walmart has recognized that organic food is a you know, saleable commodity, and they're going to try to put as much of it as they possibly can in their stores. But at the same time, given their business model and their mission, you know that they're often going to go to that lowest cost provider, and that might be the California leafy greens versus the Indiana grower who has a hoop house and is doing this, you know, really cool seasonal system here, or it could be Chinese garlic over local garlic. I mean, you don't really know, and so we're constantly going to be really bumping up against some of these challenges of how do we get bigger? How do we make it more affordable to everybody?
Can organic, small, sustainable farms feed our ever-growing population?
I hope so. I mean, I don't think we know yet. I see no reason why we couldn't, but in the end, we're going to eat less animal products than we do now. I think there's no doubt about it. We need to go from a system where we put the animals, we take them off the land, we urbanize them in windowless structures, we bring the feed to them, and then their waste becomes something that we have to move around almost as a toxic liability. And then we move the animals further into this global processing system. We want to replace that with a system where the land feeds the animals, where clawed animals, two-footed, four-footed, beaked animals actually get out and they experience the world as a creaturely being. That is going to be a completely different type of agriculture, but it's not anything that can happen overnight. We've been down this different road for far too long.
Dan Imhoff is the president of Watershed Media and the author of Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to the Next Food and Farm Bill. Read our complete interview on our website, eartheats.org. Coming up...
Do you know what the best thing to make stuffed leaves is with your leftovers? The thing about leftovers is if no one knows they're leftovers, then they're not leftovers.
Chef Daniel Orr foraged for a bunch of huge grape leaves. Some of them will be preserved and used to create little leftovers packages. Others will be used in our recipe today for dolmas stuffed with oyster mushrooms. This is a real goodie. Stay with us. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Each week, we speak with authors of everything from cookbooks to food history books. This week, we chatted with Chef Matthew Locricchio, author of Teen Cuisine. It's a cookbook aimed to make vegetarianism appealing to young people.
And I use names like Banana Slap and Banana Berry Blender Benders. And then one of my crowning glories in this book is something I called Make a Scene Pasta.
Looking beyond the silly names, the recipes are straightforward and healthy. He hopes this encourages families to make cooking an intergenerational activity. Here's 1 minute with Matthew Locricchio.
There really is nothing more important than providing good nutrition, whether it's coming out of your hands in the kitchen or you're exciting your kids enough for them to actually get in and start to cook. There are ways to save some time in terms of cooking. One of the things I suggest a lot of times to parents is plan a menu. Put together a menu for the week. Sit down with your kids and get them involved in the menu planning. Share the responsibility to go get the ingredients. Thinking all the time, the best thing that you're going to be able to do is cook your own food in your own house. Well, you know, it's funny. I teach cooking to kids a lot, and I'm always amazed at how willing they are to try things. And the big deal that I find is if teen chefs lay their hands on the ingredients and they're part of the process, either the shopping or the actual preparation, they're much more interested in trying it.
Thank you, Matthew. I appreciate the time.
Oh, I'm delighted. It was a great pleasure.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Read more about teen cuisine by Matthew Locricchio on our website, eartheats.org. Before we go into the kitchen today, we're going to pick some grape leaves. They'll be used in our recipe for dolmas. We've spoken about foraging on Earth Eats before, but let's have a refresher. Make sure you don't pick food near a heavily trafficked road. Make sure you talk to your neighbors to get their A-OK should the goodies you desire be on their property. And make sure you know how the plants have been raised. Obviously, you don't want to pick and eat something that's been sprayed with loads of chemicals. Basically, a good rule to live by, just in general, is know where your food has come from. We're with Chef Daniel Orr at his place in Columbus, Indiana today.
A lot of times you'll see wild grape leaves growing just about anywhere in southern Indiana. We've got some growing right across the road from us. The other thing you have to worry about when you're picking vine leaves is poison ivy. So
Ooh. You
can't just look up. You got to look down, too.
Ah, good call. And wear socks and pants, like I am not.
Yeah, let's see if I can find a vine to pull down. There we go. I'll just take these across the street, and I'll show you how to prepare them. All right, so we have these vine leaves. We're just going to snip off the stems. And again, you're looking for these ones that almost feel like a kid glove. They're really soft and tender. And it's nice when you have nice big ones like this
Wow. That
are still tender. Okay, we'll give these guys a nice wash first. Okay, and then I've got a canning jar. Fold the two sides over like wings and then roll them. So you could do a bunch of these, and then you put these in your canning jar, and you could probably fit about 4 or 5 rolls of the grape leaves in each jar. And then all you have to do is pour the brine over them while it's boiling in a nice salty water. This is going to cook and tenderize and also preserve them. The salt is a preservative, and then I'm just going to cover it, let that cool down to room temperature, and then keep it in the refrigerator. And that will last up to a year in the refrigerator. Okay, now I'm going to show you guys how to do a quick little stuffing. Brown rice. These are some oyster mushrooms that I grilled last night. And then I'm going to take some of our garlic chives and just cut these. Okay, we're going to take one of those farm fresh eggs. Okay, we're just going to stir that up and season it with some salt and pepper. Okay, and you could vary this with whatever herb you had. You could add a little bit of lemon zest or lemon juice. Now we're going to lay out some of these grape leaves. And the key to doing any of this kind of monotonous work is to lay a bunch out and get like a assembly line going. Okay, we're going to put a little bit of the rice and mushroom stuffing in each one. Okay, now we'll just wrap them up. Okay, folding in the two sides, then rolling them. Okay, and I'm going to finish it by drizzling a little bit of olive oil and tomato juice on it, and then we'll bake them off. And then you could eat them either hot or cold. A lot of different stuffings with this. You could do a lamb and rosemary stuffing.
So this really is something that both vegetarians and meat eaters could use.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you know what the best thing to make stuffed leaves is with your leftovers? The thing about leftovers is if no one knows they're leftovers, then they're not leftovers. Okay, I'll add a little bit of olive oil. We'll cover them, and we'll put them in that oven with the at about 250, 300, and we can let it sit for a little while we go back in the garden and do a couple other things.
And then we come back and we have a snack. That's great. And then we picked some cattails and turned to the compost heap. It was a very busy day, and that dolma snack was well-deserved. One more very springish recipe today, this one for our feathered friends.
And this recipe is perfect for all kinds of woodpeckers and other birds that might be coming around to your backyard. And what we're going to do is just mix together a bunch of ingredients. It's no-bake, so it's the easiest thing possible. I've got some lard right here. Then we're going to add some peanut butter. And we're just going to mix those two ingredients together until it forms a smooth paste. But it almost is going to look like a icing or a peanut butter cookie mixture when you get this far. So you want to incorporate all those ingredients. And then if you need to, you can always add a little bit more flour. But you want to have a nice sturdy cake, because when the sun hits it, you don't want it to just melt and roll down your tree. And then we're just going to mix in all the other little grains. We've got some cornmeal. We've got some wonderful rolled oats. We've got some bird seed, which I have millet and sunflower seeds. I'm using some white raisins, but you could use any type of dried fruit or currants, and mix those right into your little suet cake for your birds. A funny thing is that we're going to add some cayenne pepper. A lot of people would think that birds wouldn't like cayenne pepper, but they love chilies. Okay, and then we just have some molds. What I've done is I've put a little bit, you could take a cat food can or any kind of little tin or a hummus container, rub a little bit of water inside, and then you push your plastic wrap in there, and it will stick to the water that you put inside there. So I've spread these evenly inside, and then what we do is we take that, we put it in the freezer, let it firm up, and then you can just pull them out, kind of tap them out once they're frozen. You've got these wonderful little cakes.
See pictures of both of these recipes on our website. Also, we have several recipes that would be perfect for a Cinco de Mayo party. Tofu guacamole, vegan quesadillas, some mixed drinks with fresh herbs. Those are all lots of fun. Get inspiration for your next meal at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Sarah Gordon, Dan Imhoff, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Chef Daniel Orr, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thank you for listening. Till next week, happy eating, everybody. I'm Annie Corrigan.